Thank you, Blessing Zulu and Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, December 4th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Robert Mugabe vows that everyone who's allegedly or plotted to assassinate him, including those implicated in corruption, will be sacked from the government and face the prosecution.
Robert Mugabe, the president of Zimbabwe, I think he has been very consistent. He wants to rule the country until he dies. And whatever he's doing is showing that it's consistent with that thinking of his.
The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe has rolled out special coins designed to ease change problems that have been faced by members of the public in the country since the introduction of multiple currencies in 2009.
I spoke to the governor today, who was giving me a rundown to tell us these coins are already here. There are various denominations, starting from 20 cents going downwards.
And Msasa Project says domestic violence has reached the crisis levels in the country and attributes the worsening economic situation to the growing problem.
President Robert Mugabe officially opened his ZANU-PF party congress today, vowing that those who allegedly plotted to assassinate him and those implicated in corruption will be sacked from government and face prosecution. Ivan Chifera has more from Harare.
Those are ZANU-PF members at the official opening of the party's 6th National Congress in Harare today, where Mr. Mugabe continued his verbal attacks on his deputy Joyce Mujuru, calling her a thief who stole diamonds and gold as she planned to overthrow him, in apparent reference to the deputy president whom he has accused of plotting to kill him and assume the leadership of ZANU-PF. Mr. Mugabe said it did not matter whether one was a minister or deputy minister, anyone who is corrupt would be sacked and face prosecution.
Wakaita mhosva chaidzo dzesecorruption dzabuda nehumbo wakanaka.
Those who committed the crime, including corruption, will be prosecuted once we get the evidence. And if you are a minister, deputy minister, or civil servant, you'll be sacked. But we want evidence. Give us the evidence.
Ms. Mujuru and ministers like Didmas Mutasa and Nicholas Goche did not attend the meeting. Mr. Mugabe said Ms. Mujuru and the alleged allies had not been blocked from attending, but had decided not to come. Mr. Mugabe described them as criminals, saying their behavior was not in line with the principles of ZANU-PF.
You see, we have gaps on the top table. Where are they? We did not expel them, and we did not bar them. We wanted them to come and tell their story. They went away without telling us, like criminals.
ZANU-PF youths had, however, threatened to deal with Ms. Mujuru if she dared attend the Congress. Mr. Mugabe, who was flanked by his wife, Chairman Simon Kayamoyo, Speaker of the National Assembly Jacob Mudenda, and President of the Senate Edna Madzongwe, said he had known for a long time that his deputy was allegedly plotting to topple him. He commended his wife, Grace, for exposing the alleged plot to oust him from office.
The plan was hidden, but it was exposed by Amai Mugabe, who said it was bad to remove me from office through illegal means. That's when we saw all these issues being exposed in public.
Mr. Mugabe said he was saddened that ZANU-PF leaders had not behaved in an exemplary manner, adding this had divided the party. He said some of the leaders were allegedly working with what he said were Zimbabwe's detractors to effect regime change in Zimbabwe. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Following Namibia's successful general elections, which were conducted electronically, the Crisis Coalition in Zimbabwe is spearheading a campaign urging Zimbabwe to implement the ballot paperless vote in the country's next elections. Yesterday, the coalition held a public meeting together with the Election Resource Center in Harare to discuss the electronic voting system that was used in Africa for the first time in the Namibian elections. The discussion, according to sources, centered around whether the system could be used without being manipulated.
However, the discussion was aborted after some rowdy elements believed to be against the current leadership in the coalition disrupted the discussion. We reached crisis spokesman Fundo Mlilo, who says Zimbabwe should consider using electronic voting because it has more advantages than ballot paper voting.
The discussion was about e-voting. Namibia held elections on the 28th of November, and these elections used the first e-voting system in the whole of Africa. So Namibia has become the first country to use the system of e-voting. E-voting is a system which uses machines as opposed to the use of paper voting. So generally what happens with the system that happened in Namibia is that a voter comes into a polling station, they are checked through a machine, and then there are two buttons on the machine. So the green button allows you to choose the political party or the candidate which you want to vote for.
We understand that the meeting was disrupted. Can you tell us more?
Yes, there were attempts to disrupt the meeting, although the meeting went ahead and we managed to finish it peacefully. There are hired thugs, I would believe, who came to our meeting singing and disrupting the meeting. These people are known to us. They do not belong to any member of the Crisis Coalition. Crisis Coalition is made up of over 80 active civic rights organizations. So these people do not belong to any of the organizations.
That was Mfundo Mlilo, the spokesman of the Crisis Coalition in Zimbabwe. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe has rolled out special coins designed to ease change problems that have been faced by members of the public since the introduction of multiple currencies in 2009. According to the Chinese news agency Xinhua and Consumer Council of Zimbabwe, the central bank last night unveiled the coins minted in South Africa to some stakeholders, including consumer groups, retailers, and various entities. Consumer Council of Zimbabwe Director Rosemary Siachitema says the RBZ has indicated that the special coins that are indexed at par with the United States coins will be distributed in the country soon. Siachitema tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the coins are expected to be warmly welcomed by members of the public.
I spoke to the governor today, who was giving me a rundown of what happened, because he was aware that I was not at the meeting. So he just gave me a rundown to tell us these coins are already here. There are various denominations from 20 cents going downwards. There are no 50 cents yet. They are still being produced. So from what I understand at the meeting, there were retailers and, all the people who had an interest in that. They were there at the meeting when these coins were launched. And they are going to be available as soon as after this launch.
Is this going to help members of the public?
I think this is something that already, of course, since the introduction of the multi-currency system, especially the US dollar, the issue of change has been an issue. And people have had to do with buying Swiss and the things that they really have not budgeted for. Yet maybe that money they could have used it for transport costs and other things. So the launch of these coins are going to come very handy. The other issue is that, of course, in shops, some of the prices of the goods were rounded off to a full dollar or whatever it was because of the issue of change. Now the anticipation is that some of the things are going to go down.
That was Rosemary Siachitema, Director of the Consumer Council of Zimbabwe, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare.
Economist Godfrey Kanyenze of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe says the rolling out of the coins was long overdue.
It's a long-standing issue, the issue of ensuring that it is easier for the transacting public to basically get change. Also, it helps because the oil prices have been rounded off to the nearest dollar, because of the issue of lack of change. So it should be a good thing in theory, in the sense that it should be helped Zimbabwe basically so that they don't get trees or biltong like what used to happen, but they get coins, which may not necessarily be the actual US coins.
And this is a roadmap that was actually made by the new governor of the Reserve Bank. So at the end of the day, can you say he's actually fulfilling that kind of, you know, a roadmap?
Absolutely, it is. You may recall that it's not actually his baby, because this issue started a long time ago, and it had been discounted on the basis of cost.
That was Godfrey Kanyenze of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe.
Msasa Project, a non-governmental women's human rights organization, says domestic violence in the country has reached crisis levels, adding the continuing collapse of the economy could be a major contributor to the problem. The group says from January to October 9,000 cases of domestic violence cases were reported to the group alone. Last year, Msasa recorded 15,000 cases of gender-based violence. The women's rights groups say it seems like awareness campaigns are not working. Msasa Project says 70% of the cases that they are dealing with involve girls between the ages of 11 and 14. Msasa Project Director Neti Msanu tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the economic crisis is straining family ties.
We have a multiplicity of problems. I think as a country we have been going through a lot of economic problems. So one of the things that we've seen is that the depressed incomes within the homes, and people are fighting for the very few resources that are available. So there is a lot of tension if you look at even the numbers of women that have to approach the maintenance court to get some assistance. Clearly, I think our value system as a country also is really questionable, especially if you regard the number of incest cases that we are getting, the number of rape cases against children. This is mainly happening within the home. So there are multi-layered problems that we are facing, and then this is causing a lot of the uptake in gender-based violence cases.
But what is your message to Zimbabweans? What can be done?
For me, I think the message is, especially at the point we are now, this is not an issue for organizations. It's not an issue for even the Minister of Women Affairs on their own. This is an issue for everyone. Because every home has women, every home has girls. And I think communities and society in general really need to take responsibility for the safety and security of their own. And we really need more men to speak out against these issues, in particular men that are in positions of power, to really condemn issues of violence against women. Because a lot of times when we talk about it, people want to minimize it and they think it's a women's issue. This is not a women's issue. This is not a domestic issue. Actually, it is a national crisis.
That was Msasa Project Director Neti Msanu speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
we take a close look at the unfolding situation in ZANU-PF.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
The International Criminal Court has given prosecutors 1 week to either strengthen or drop charges against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta. The trial has been postponed several times, and the Hague-based court released a statement yesterday saying further delay would be contrary to the interest of justice under the circumstances.
A grand jury in New York City has voted not to indict a white police officer in the chokehold death of an unarmed black man in July. The decision reached yesterday by the Staten Island grand jury not to bring charges against Officer Daniel Pantaleo threatened to add to the tensions that have simmered in the city since the July 17th death of Eric Garner.
And the South African president arrived in China yesterday for a high-level state visit along with a crew of heavy hitters from South Africa's top ministries. The visit is another step forward in South Africa's treasured relationship with its largest trading partner. President Jacob Zuma's entourage makes it clear that this is no ordinary state visit. When the South African president landed yesterday in Beijing for a two-day state visit ending on Friday, he was accompanied by no fewer than seven cabinet ministers, including the chiefs of the ministries of finance, foreign affairs, trade and industry, and transport. Mr. Zuma said in a statement that the main goal of this visit is to ensure that our relations, and this is a direct quotation, ensure that our relations with China remain central to realizing our developmental agenda through our foreign policy.
Zimbabweans traveling to and from South Africa have expressed concern at the congestion at Beitbridge Border Post, saying South African authorities are using only one center to screen the travelers for Ebola, while haulage truck drivers blame Zimbabwean officials for delaying to clear their vehicles because of inadequate manpower. Queues for the trucks are reportedly stretching from the Zimbabwean border to the South African side, while those for Ebola screening are stretching for several kilometers. However, chairperson of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, Ngabuto Mabena, tells Studio 7 Standekile Mhlanga that the long lines, especially those for Ebola screening, may be exacerbated by the oncoming festive season.
They've been targeting long-distance trucks, but now it seems it has also gone to passengers, particularly those that use buses. A few minutes ago, I was just talking to some on social media that say there was a queue. A passenger is given a sticker. If you go inside the border post, try to stamp your passport. If you don't have a sticker that you are given, we are told that the officials will not stamp your passport and asking you to go back to that queue so that you are issued with that sticker, then they can stamp your passport. But like last week, I was at the same border because we're driving a private vehicle. We're not tested for Ebola.
What are you getting from the government concerning people's concerns?
What the Minister of Health, Dr. Botsetti, has always been saying is that they are monitoring everyone coming in the country. And as you would know, that the Zimbabwean border post Beitbridge. So people coming all the way from Congo, Ethiopia, everywhere. So this is why there's so much focus on that. We have not checked the other port of entry, for instance, the border with Swaziland, border with Lesotho, the border with Mozambique, in terms of how they carry out those tests.
And that was Ngabuto Mabena, chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, on the line with Studio 7 from Johannesburg in South Africa.
As reported earlier, President Robert Mugabe today officially opened his party's National Congress in Harare and labeled under fire Vice President Joyce Mujuru a thief who stole diamonds and gold. Mrs. Mujuru's crime, apparently, according to Mr. Mugabe, is that she became too ambitious and dared to dream that she could one day succeed a man she once revered and described as a tutor who had taken her in his wings for a long time. Addressing the Congress, Mr. Mugabe said that Mrs. Mujuru had absented herself from the Congress in what he said was a typical fashion of a thief. Some of the top ZANU-PF officials linked to Mrs. Mujuru who did not attend the Congress are Labour Minister Nicholas Goche and ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Didimus Mtasa. For perspective on the unfolding events in ZANU-PF, we turned to political analyst Gladys Hlatshwayo and Chamunorwa Madiridze. Hlatshwayo says she's not surprised by what is happening in ZANU-PF.
I think what is happening in ZANU-PF is very sad, but at the same time, I think as Zimbabweans, we mustn't have a short memory. This is consistent with what ZANU-PF has been displaying over the years. It is a party that has always branded itself as a party of blood, literally. I think we have seen it over the years in the way that it's dealing with opposition, but also now in the way that it's dealing with its own people. Robert Mugabe, the president of Zimbabwe, I think he has been very consistent. He wants to rule the country until he dies, and whatever he's doing is showing that he's consistent with that thinking of his. So I think from where I stand, this is nothing new. It's just consistent with the way that Mugabe wants to rule the country until he dies.
Your take, Mr. Madirize?
It's a sad moment for the Mujuri camp. This Congress event, it's a sad event for the nation as a whole, not to the Mujuri camp alone. And I think the entire nation agrees to this particular fact. It has not only been said for the Mujuri camp and sympathizers, but to even those that yearn for political development, because democracy as a pillar of our society also suffer a major blow because of these events. We witness another unbelievable negation of democracy and dissent by the long-time Machiavellian political pundits. And the Central Committee and even these decision-making bodies within the ZANU-PF party, they continue to pound on that widow as if she is the only one who has been corrupt. And it is clear that foul play against the vice president is written in black and white. However, the current situation in ZANU-PF warrants no celebrations, especially to the Mnangagwa camp and those so-called weevils, because the outcome and the entire event has been prejudiced. Grace Mugabe's moves and Mnangagwa's moves will lead to the emanation of a leadership from this Congress with this gross illegitimacy. And I don't know the plan that they have to actually counter this aura of illegitimacy and illegality that has been bestowed upon themselves by their moves in the past weeks. So as the situation appears, there is no more going back. And I view Mnangagwa as the man of the moment at the Congress. And come December, come the end of December, there will be most unfortunate scenarios in the economy, on the political scene, and on the social scene as well.
Thank you, Mr. Madirize. Just to borrow a term, Gladys, from Mr. Madirize, he says there's been a lot of pounding on the Vice President, Joyce Mujuru, and we've seen now the President, since the beginning of the Congress period from Monday to now, he has been saying a lot of things, including saying that woman, a mere woman, also wanted to be the President of the country. What is your take from what Mr. Mugabe has been saying about Mrs. Mujuru?
Just before I answer, I just wanted to, say something about what my brother said, particularly on the fact that Mnangagwa is the man of the moment. I do not agree with that view, because if we fail to see that this is going to benefit Mugabe, I think we'll be losing it by a very wide margin. This whole, charade is just about benefiting Mugabe. If we, go back a little while, there's a point, I think, in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, when the chairpersons that were aligned to the Mnangagwa faction were removed from the party, were sacked from the party. We see that Mugabe has been very consistent in dealing with his opponents. So depending on who is the opponent at the time, at this particular time, his view is that the Mujuru faction has gained so much power to the effect that it's now threatening his own political power. That's the reason why he's taking action. So for me, I've been seeing, Mugabe dealing with the Mujuru and Mnangagwa faction, playing one faction against the other. It's not really about Mnangagwa, but it's about Mugabe. If we fail to see that this whole charade and shenanigans are just about power retention agenda by Mugabe, will be losing the plot by a very wide margin. Coming to the question that you're answering, it's really unfortunate that Mujuru is being battered left, right, and center. And this is barely like 2 years after the husband died in very mysterious circumstances. But at some point, we must be able also to realize that these are the things that the opposition, that civil society, and other pro-democracy forces in Zimbabwe have always been saying. We've been saying that what we need is democracy, what we need is the respect for the constitution, what we need are human rights and transparency, accountability, all of those tenets that make up good governance. And had Mujuru being the vice president listened to the opposition and listened to the, you know, cries of civil society, we could be in a much better space. And it was also going to benefit internally in terms of the politics of ZANU-PF. So it's unfortunate at some point she's also facing, you know, the wrath of Mugabe, the wrath that has been faced by opposition and civil society leaders for the and activists for the past, you know, 10 or 15 years. So it's really unfortunate. We sympathize with her, but at the same time, we mustn't also forget that she was, you know, part of the system that Zimbabweans have been fighting for.
Mr.
Madidze, or fighting against.
Thank you, Gladys. Mr. Madidze, as you respond to Gladys, can you also just, you know, look at ZANU-PF as a party from what we have known, and people used to say in Shona, ZANU Chuororo, but now when you come to look at ZANU-PF, do you think it will ever be the same again?
Well, it will never be the same again. We are likely to see a lot of changes in terms of its strength as a party. The strength that it had before this particular Congress will never be the same. I think it will emerge out of this Congress, a weakened party. And this Congress, I'm sure it's a sad event, I insist, to the nation of Zimbabwe, because the current ZANU situation does nothing except, the current ZANU-PF situation does nothing except leaving the generality of Zimbabweans to the mercy of harsh socio-political realities.
Thank you, Gladys. Lastly, your take on ZANU-PF's future and any other possible names that you see coming out of this Congress as possible contenders for the top jobs?
The future for me, I think, is bleak. And I think the disintegration has already started. I think if we look into the history of ZANU-PF, this is one of the first moments that we are witnessing, you know, an open, you know, kind of a war. All these times that we have been hearing of internal fights, we have not been seeing people really coming out in the media, coming out in the open, attacking each other. But I think this is the first time that we are seeing such developments. And I think it's definitely going to dent the party. Going out of this Congress is going to be a very weakened party, not united.
That was political analyst Gladys Wachayo in Minnesota in the United States. You also heard the views of Chamunorwa Madiridze, another independent political analyst. He is in South Africa.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today on the Women's Forum. Marvelous and Praxedis take a look at women and politics, taking a cue from the unfolding events in ZANU-PF.
To join the discussion, please text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Now to recap today's top stories.
President Robert Mugabe vows that everyone who allegedly plotted to assassinate him, including those implicated in corruption, will be sacked from government and face prosecution.
The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe rolls out special coins to ease change.
And Msasa Project says domestic violence has reached crisis levels in the country.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Sandekile and Ntungamili. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.